Police officer shot and killed. I'm Pam Puso, Fox News. He's being described as a good husband, father, and sheriff's deputy. Authorities in Webster Parish, Louisiana, say Deputy William Collins Jr. was fatally shot last night while responding to a disturbance call at a home in Doyline, about 20 miles east of Shreveport. Jason Parker is the Webster Parish sheriff.
My main focus over the next few days, over the next few weeks, months, is going to support them and give them all that I can to help make this better and give them some closure.
The suspect, who barricaded himself inside the home, was taken into custody. A warning from the U.S. to Russia over cyber attacks.
Days after a ransomware attack on a Florida IT company, President Biden spoke on the phone with Russian President Vladimir Putin, calling on him to crack down on bad actors and warning the U.S. will take action to defend its people and critical infrastructure.
Fox's Rachel Sutherland, the White House hasn't said what actions might be taken if the attacks continue. As the Delta variant of the coronavirus spreads throughout the country, California is diverging from the latest CDC guidance. Masks will continue to be worn in schools whether people are fully vaccinated or not. Ellen Saubert-Schatz with the CDC says other schools might do the same.
It can be difficult for a school to either document the vaccination status of their students, teachers, and staff. And so in that situation, they might decide to do universal policies.
In Detroit, public school students will be required to wear masks unless everyone in the classroom has been vaccinated. A third consecutive day of record-high COVID-19 cases has South Korea tightening restrictions to the highest level on Monday. America's listening to Fox News. It shouldn't be long before a new House committee investigating the Capitol riot gets to work.
The first hearing for the House Select Committee on January 6th will set the tone for the investigation, Committee Chairman Benny Thompson told the Associated Press. Thompson says a public hearing could happen in less than 2 weeks with testimony from first responders, including those beaten by rioters trying to prevent Congress from certifying the Electoral College. House Democrats approved the Select Committee last month with only two Republicans supporting it. One of them, Wyoming Congresswoman Liz Cheney, was named to the panel by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Republican leader Kevin McCarthy has not yet said who he intends to name to the committee. Jared Halpern, Fox News.
The remaining fencing around the Capitol is coming down. Fox News is told the work will start on the Senate side of the complex on Constitution Avenue. The process could take a few days. Former President Trump has a busy weekend ahead of him. He's scheduled to speak at CPAC on Sunday in Dallas, but before that, he'll have one of the best seats in the House for tonight's UFC 264 in Las Vegas. That's according to Ultimate Fighting Champion President Dana White.
It's the first major sporting event that Mr. Trump will be in attendance for since leaving the White House, headlined by the third showdown between Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier. White and Trump have been friends for decades.
Fox's Matt Napolitano. A grizzly bear that killed a camper has been killed in Montana.
Federal wildlife workers believe they got the right bear. Wearing night vision goggles early Friday, they shot the grizzly as it approached a trap set near a chicken coop. The animal was considered a public safety threat because of the nature of the deadly attack earlier in the week. A California woman on a mountain biking trip was pulled out of her tent and killed about an hour after the bear had first awakened her group in pre-dawn hours.
Fox's Lisa Brady. I'm Pam Puso, Fox News.
In D.C., heads up, East Capitol Street eastbound is closed for standing water in the roadway between the Whitney Young Bridge and 295. On 66 in Virginia, westbound traffic is slow in Vienna between Nutley Street and the Vienna Metro Station. No delays for the 66 on the eastbound side. And on Old Georgetown Road at Tilden, you're going to find roadway is blocked because of a pole down into the middle of the road. And no reports of any slowdowns on the Beltway, both in Virginia and in Maryland on the inner loop and on the outer loop. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Well, a beautiful Saturday ahead this morning. Very comfortable temperatures climbing out of the 60s and 70s. High temperatures this afternoon in the mid-80s, but what I like about today is the humidity will be nice and low. So take advantage, get outside and enjoy it, because humidity levels starting to rise overnight tonight. Tomorrow, hotter, more humid. We're back to 90 degrees with a slight chance for a pop-up shower or thunderstorm during the afternoon and evening. I'm 7 News meteorologist Eileen Whalen in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
Now, the Saturday morning update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler, Jeff Wolf behind the console, Jane Houghton and our producer this morning. And the world is a ball of confusion. Let me tell you, the wheels continue to come off. Where do we begin? How about COVID-19? Confusion out of a couple of sources yesterday and some attempts to mop it up. What happened is that Pfizer signaled its intention to file for emergency use authorization for a COVID-19 booster shot. Well, that caught some people off guard. Now, the FDA and the CDC say that fully vaccinated Americans do not need an extra dose at this time, but some concern when we find that Pfizer is looking to file for emergency use authorization for a booster shot. So, to try and clarify things, this is what Dr. Anthony Fauci had to say yesterday.
Nothing has changed with regard to the CDC's recommendations. So we respect what the pharmaceutical company is doing, but the American public should take their advice from the CDC and the FDA. The CDC and the FDA say if you've been fully vaccinated at this point in time, you do not need a booster shot.
So that's Dr. Anthony Fauci. Now, you remember Dr. Jerome Adams. He was the former Surgeon General, of course, in the Trump administration. Here's how he assessed things yesterday.
It's troubling that there's such a lack of coordination on communication between the companies and the federal government.
And looking at coronavirus, 27 states are reporting a rise in cases. That due to the spread of the Delta variant. Now, at the same time, the CDC issued guidance yesterday calling for a return to in-person learning in the fall, calling it a, quote, priority. They say vaccinated teachers and students don't need to wear masks inside school buildings. And again, that came out yesterday from the CDC. Those Delta variant cases have risen 165% in Los Angeles in just the last week. At this time, 47% in the United States are fully vaccinated and a lower number in the European Union. Well, that's one of the issues we're dealing with. We're also dealing with ransomware. And President Biden responding, sort of, maybe, I don't know for sure, responding to Vladimir Putin about the latest ransomware attacks and some pretty significant ones out there. 1,500 companies have been affected in the latest ransomware attack, and the hackers asking for a $70 million payout to let all 1,500 companies off the hook. So what does that mean for the president? Well, he was asked yesterday about a phone call that he had with Vladimir Putin about ransomware and Afghanistan.
Well, I made it very clear to him that that the United States expects when a ransomware operation is coming from his soil, even though it's not sponsored by the state, we expect them to act if we give them enough information to act on who that is. And secondly, that we've set up a means of communications now on a regular basis to be able to communicate to one another when each of us thinks something's happening in another country that affects the home country. And so it went well. I'm optimistic.
You said 3 weeks ago there wouldn't be consequences. Will there be, sir?
Yes.
Okay, so the president says there will be consequences, and not sure what they will be. It's kind of interesting. He's talking about the opening of communications and that they can talk to each other now. I think they've been doing it on the hotline now for over five decades. But I'm not so sure how much pressure we're actually putting on Russia. And you know how Vladimir Putin feels about weakness versus strength. So that's another of the issues facing us and facing the Biden administration. I've got a little audio here from Rashida Tlaib, of course, one of the Democratic members of the squad. And we've heard all about the issues at the border. And, of course, the Secretary of Homeland Security says the border's closed. And if you watch some of the news outlets, you'll see what's actually going on at the border. Well, Congressman Tlaib, she has the solution to the problem.
We must eliminate funding for CPB, ICE, and their parent organization, DHS. These agencies are inept to humanely guiding migrants through our immigration system, and further continue to terrorize migrant communities.
Okay, so she wants to eliminate DHS, that is the Department of Homeland Security. That's a smart move, as well as ICE and Customs and Border Patrol. We might as well eliminate all the police departments while we're at it. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. But I'm sure that will be featured in many of the upcoming Republican congressional race commercials that we will be seeing. A new House committee investigating the January 6th Capitol insurrection is expected to hold its first public hearing with police officers. It's coming up next week, and that's the word from Mississippi Representative Benny Thompson, who is the chairman of the new selected panel. Another opportunity for the Democrats to grandstand over the January 6th insurrection. That's another of the things we're covering. Now, CPAC, you know, typically in the wintertime, in February, here in the Washington area, well, there is a conservative political action conference going on this weekend in Texas. That's right, in the Big D, Dallas. And President Trump will be the keynote speaker. Former President Trump will address the group on Sunday evening as he closes out CPAC. So a lot of energy will be generated in the conservative movement, especially in Texas this weekend. So look for some excitement coming out of CPAC, as it always does, for those of you who are conservatives. We were talking last week about some crime numbers in a poll that was conducted in the Washington Post by ABC News and the Washington Post. And one of the interesting numbers that was in that poll, when you ask Americans how they feel about serious crime in this country, 28% say it is an extreme problem. 31% say it's a very serious problem. So 59% of the people in the country are viewing the crime wave across the country as either extreme or very serious. So I think that's an interesting indicator as we head toward the congressional midterms in 2022. What is that going to mean at the ballot box? Well, what did it mean in New York? Because they just had a mayoral primary, and it took them a couple of weeks to sort it all out, but they've got all the absentee votes in now. And Eric Adams was the winner in the Democratic mayoral campaign in New York. Well, you say, what's the significance there? Well, he's a former police officer, and he's even talked about carrying a gun around the mayor's mansion, Gracie Mansion, in New York. So Eric Adams, the Democratic mayoral candidate, a former police officer. So what does that tell you about how people feel in New York City about the crime in their city? He has been known pretty much as the anti-Bill de Blasio. He wins the Democratic mayoral candidacy. He'll be running against Republican Curtis Sliwa for the New York mayor's seat. It's 6:17. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL, and we head to the WMAL Traffic Center. Al BD is there this morning.
On the Maryland side of the Beltway, you're going to go from Prince George's County through Montgomery County, both on the inner loop and on the outer loop, without tapping the brakes. Now, if you're traveling between the two beltways, whether it's the BW Parkway or on 95, no delays on the northbound side or on the southbound side. In Prince George's County on Route 50 between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, it's clear eastbound and westbound. And at the Bay Bridge, currently right now, there are two lanes headed east and three lanes coming west. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Well, a beautiful Saturday ahead this morning. Very comfortable temperatures climbing out of the 60s and 70s. High temperatures this afternoon in the mid-80s, but what I like about today is the humidity will be nice and low. So take advantage, get outside and enjoy it, because humidity levels starting to rise overnight tonight. Tomorrow, hotter, more humid. We're back to 90 degrees with a slight chance for a pop-up shower or thunderstorm during the afternoon and evening. I'm 7 News meteorologist Eileen Whalen in the StormWatch 7 Weather Center.
Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It is the Saturday morning update. It is good to have you with us. I'm Rick Fowler, and we are glad that you've joined us. If you watch certain news outlets, you probably not really aware how serious crime is around the country. You're not seeing it in the headlines on CNN and MSNBC. As an example, in Chicago, holiday weekend, last weekend, 99 were shot, 17 dead, 11 kids wounded, 2 police officers shot, okay? This past Thursday in Chicago, 3 killed, 19 wounded. There have been 6,100 shot in the last 19 months. The mayor blames gun laws in Michigan, Indiana, and Wisconsin because those guns end up in Chicago. The irony is, gun violence is much lower in Michigan, Indiana, and Wisconsin. Probably the highlight of the week, I got to say, is the conviction of Michael Avenatti. We all know Michael Avenatti, the attorney who was representing Stormy Daniels, who everyone on the progressive side felt was the one person, the messiah, that could take down Donald Trump. Well, he didn't succeed, and he $11 million in debt at the time, so he came up with a little scheme to try and extort $25 million out of Nike. Well, Nike wasn't too happy about it. They went to the authorities, and there was an investigation. And Michael Avenatti, 2.5 years in prison. Now, there have been many, many montages. You may have seen them on TV, etc. I had my own that I started to do. And then I heard Chris Plant's montage yesterday on Michael Avenatti, the media montage of their love fest for Michael Avenatti. And I said, let's use that one because it's better than one that I'm going to do. So our credit to Michael Piercy and Chris Plant. This is classic. You may remember the number of different media appearances, the praise that Michael Avenatti was receiving from all of those pundits on CNN, MSNBC. I mean, ABC was loving him. CBS was loving him. And it sounded like this.
He's Donald Trump's worst nightmare, Michael Avenatti.
Joining us once again is Michael Avenatti.
Let's bring in Michael Avenatti.
Michael Avenatti. Michael Avenatti.
Michael Avenatti, thank you very much.
He's out there saving the country.
John Meacham says he may be the savior of the republic.
You are something of a folk hero now.
I owe Michael Avenatti an apology. I've been saying enough already, Michael. I've seen you everywhere. What do you have left to say? I was wrong, brother. You have a lot to say.
I am just dying to hear what you think.
Because people all like you.
I'm the only person right here Donald Trump fears more than Robert Miller.
We think you guys are the tip of the spear that's going to take down Donald Trump.
Michael Avenatti's a beast.
Okay, that's true.
And
he's a beast.
He's a beast.
I hand it to her, and I hand it to Michael Avenatti.
But he has a great, bigger calling here, that being a lawyer is minimal compared to what he's doing.
No one has talked tougher directly to Donald Trump on TV than Michael Avenatti, and Donald Trump is afraid to mention his name.
That's fascinating. Donald Trump is terrified of Michael Avenatti.
He gives Trump a run for his money more than anybody else, Michael Avenatti.
An existential threat to the Trump presidency.
The Democrats could learn something from you. You are messing with Trump a lot more than they are.
He has no doubt created sheer panic in Donald Trump's very fragile mind.
Michael Avenatti is laying down the law as guest co-host. And is he really thinking about running for president?
One reason why I'm taking you seriously as a contender is because of your presence on cable news.
You look at the field of Democrats right now, and Avenatti's the one who stands out.
If they decide they value a fighter most,
yes,
people would be foolish to underestimate Michael Avenatti.
I have always said that they need a fighter.
Look, I mean, we're going to continue to use the media. I think we've used it with great success.
You know, it's so funny. And Brian Stelter is a guy that a lot of people pick on. He's got a weekend show on CNN, Reliable Sources. And this is just one of the classics from Brian Stelter. As he praises Michael Avenatti as a possible contender for the presidency.
I don't know if it's a good thing that star power and TV savvy is required for the job, but I think it is. And by the way, I think President Obama also had a lot of TV star power, and that helped him pre-Trump. But Trump is more evidence of this. And looking ahead to 2020, one reason why I'm taking you seriously as a contender is because of your presence on cable news.
So Brian Stelter was taking him seriously as a contender. And that's exactly why we don't take Brian Stelter seriously. And I could poke at a number of the folks here, and you know, we all make mistakes, but it comes down to judgment. And the judgment that all of these pundits and anchors, I mean legitimate, well, quote-unquote legitimate news anchors, all of the credibility they put into Michael Avenatti and how they gushed over Michael Avenatti, it just shows a lack of judgment. And it's that same judgment, that same process that so many of these pundits and anchors have. It's that same process that's so troubling. Where is the judgment? I mean, how do you not realize that defunding the police is going to lead to a surge in violent crime? And that surge in violent crime will ultimately lead to citizens in minority communities having enough of it. So they nominate Eric Adams, a former police officer from Brooklyn in New York, to be the mayor of New York because people in minority communities that have been affected so much by this violence, they've had enough. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this out. But what can I say? So it's the lack of judgment that is so evident and so obvious in all of those Michael Avenatti clips. And we're going to talk more about Michael Avenatti's case with Jim Trusty. Of course, he is our legal counsel, and he'll be talking with us a little bit later on this morning. We're also going to ask him about former President Trump's suit. He filed a class action suit against the major social media outlets. How far might that go? We'll find out from Jim Trusty this morning. I think it's going to be a very interesting discussion with Jim. Also coming up, we'll talk with John Gizzi, of course, the White House correspondent at Newsmax and Newsmax TV. And John was at the White House on Friday, and we'll talk to him about President Biden's response on Afghanistan as well as the ransomware attacks. We'll also be talking with John about that assassination of the Haitian president, and also more details on Eric Adams, the Democratic mayoral candidate in New York, and a comeback for a Republican on Staten Island who was supported in his campaign by former President Trump. I think you'll find that interesting. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer is going to join us this morning. We'll talk with him about Afghanistan, the military side of the Afghanistan debate. Reports this morning that the Taliban is claiming they have now taken over 80% of Afghanistan. Of course, that's according to the Taliban, but they are on the move, and I think pretty much everybody acknowledges that. And we'll be talking with KT McFarland as well later on this morning, and we'll check in with KT on the president's stand on Russia and also on Afghanistan. Jennifer Harper joins us. Of course, she writes Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times, and we always had a lot of fun with Jennifer. She's got some interesting polls that we're looking at, and that's going to be coming up this morning with Jennifer Harper. So stick around. She's right after the news. We're going to check the news next, and then we'll be back with Jennifer and also Jim Trusty within the next half hour.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
In other news we're following this morning on WMAL, the White House says that President Biden has fired the Social Security Commissioner. Biden also accepted the resignation of the agency's deputy commissioner. The White House says Biden asked Commissioner Andrew Saul to resign. Saul's employment was terminated when he refused the Democratic president's request. The deputy commissioner, David Black, agreed to step down. Both officials had been put in place under President Trump. Biden has named Kilolo Kazaki, the agency's deputy commissioner for retirement and disability policy, to lead the agency in an acting capacity. The Biden White House no longer refraining from criticizing Republican officials who play down the importance of coronavirus vaccinations or seek to make political hay of the federal government's all-out effort to drive shots into arms. With COVID-19 vaccination rates plateauing across the country, the White House is returning fire at those they see as spreading harmful misinformation or fear about the shots. When South Carolina Governor Henry McMaster tried to block door-to-door efforts to drive up the vaccination rate in South Carolina, the White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki did not mince words. She said the failure to provide accurate information about the vaccine is, quote, literally killing people. Families waiting in Sunrise, Florida for news on relatives who were in that Florida condo building when it collapsed, turning to each other for support now. Twice a day for 2 weeks, they've gathered together in a hotel ballroom in Surfside, Florida, where rescue officials break news to them before it is announced publicly. We're at 6:33 on the Saturday morning update. Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
Right now, the Beltway is clear, both in Virginia and in Maryland on the inner loop and on the outer loop. No delays traveling between the two Beltways on the BW Parkway and on 95. In North Bethesda, though, Old Georgetown Road is blocked in both directions at Tilden for a down pole in the street. And in Vienna, on 66 westbound, traffic is slow between Nutley Street, exit 62, and the Vienna Metro Station. I have no reports of any slowdowns on the eastbound side of 66. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Well, a beautiful Saturday ahead this morning. Very comfortable temperatures climbing out of the 60s and 70s. High temperatures this afternoon in the mid-80s, but what I like about today is the humidity will be nice and low. So take advantage, get outside and enjoy it, because humidity levels starting to rise overnight tonight. Tomorrow, hotter, more humid. We're back to 90 degrees with a slight chance for a pop-up shower or thunderstorm during the afternoon and evening. I'm 7 News meteorologist Eileen Whalen in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
68 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:34 on the Saturday morning update.
8. Celebrate the grand reopening of America and register for your chance to win a two-night stay at Red Roof Inn. Details at WMAL.com/contests.
Hey, it's the Saturday morning update. Good to have you with us, and it's always great to have Jennifer Harper join us. She writes inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
You know, it seems like we just had CPAC, but we have another conservative political action conference this weekend.
Yes, indeed, Rick, you're right. This is unprecedented for the American Conservative Union, but indeed they are having a second CPAC, and it's already underway, actually. It started yesterday, Friday, and it is in the Lone Star State. They are in Dallas, Texas, and this is a very bodacious kind of gathering down there. It's lasting the whole weekend. And just a couple of stats here. There are going to be 80 speakers there, primed to a very enthusiastic audience. I did some of the counting. The speakers include, of course, former President Donald Trump will be there. There will be 3 U.S. senators, 25 U.S. representatives, a whole host of former U.S. government officials, radio and TV analysts, columnists, investigative reporters, military heroes, pollsters, activists, policy experts, and authors. And we'll have to also make sure that everyone understands that the theme of this conference is America Uncanceled. So they are going after the idea that anything traditional America that people want to do away with, they certainly don't want to go there. And Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, in fact, is going to give a speech titled Don't Mess with Texas or America. And they're also going to have a cattleman's ball. And that's going to be complete with a live band and line dancing. That's what they do down there in Texas. And Mr. Trump is kind of the grand finale of the event. He will be there towards the end of the Cattleman's Ball. Don't have, for security reasons, the exact time he's appearing, but it will be on Sunday. And there you go. All your CPAC needs for today.
While we're talking Texas, you have some interesting stats on who's coming across that southern border.
Yes, I do. You know, we normally think in terms of most of the folks coming up from Central America and Mexico and places like that, but this is just far from the truth, and I'm going to Todd Bensman. He's a senior national security fellow for the nonprofit Center for Immigration Studies. He literally did go down to the Costa Rica-Nicaragua border, talked to a lot of people, looked at a lot of statistics and so forth, and he reveals that the illegal immigrants now headed for America hail from more than 140 different countries. And this is what Mr. Bensman said. He says they're bound for the intercontinental trail connecting the world to the U.S. southern border. He says, by all indications, the world route is more congested than at any time in recent memory, with people from Bangladesh, Uzbekistan, Russia, Burkina Faso, Mauritania, Syria, Iraq, Pakistan, Somalia, and dozens of other countries, he said. He says also migrants in the long-distance flow have always made up a relatively small piece of total illegal immigrants encounters on the southern border. And he said, but this number has suddenly sprouted high as Central American nations have started to lift their pandemic border closures. And President Trump has since left office. He says this has released a pent-up wave. And are going to our friends at the Border Patrol. Their encounter statistics down there released in June show that the agents' encounters of non-Mexican, non-Central American immigrants skyrocketed from 1,308 in May 2020 to 40,000 in May 2021. So that's certainly a phenomenon that's worth watching.
You know, you mentioned cancel culture a few minutes ago, and Mark Levin's probably on the list of folks that they would like to see canceled, but he's rocking the house at Amazon these days, huh?
Yes, he is. He is definitely pushing back against all of that. He's got a new book coming out called American Marxism. Doesn't come out till next week, but it has already hit number 2 at Amazon. It's currently somewhere around number 5, but it's remaining in the top 10 despite the fact it hasn't been published yet. And this is what he writes. The counter-revolution to the American Revolution is now in full force, and it can no longer be dismissed or ignored, for it is devouring our society and our culture, swirling around our everyday lives and ubiquitous in our politics, schools, media, and entertainment. And his whole thing, according to Simon & Schuster, which is the publisher, it's actually the conservative imprint, Threshold Editions, which is connected with Simon & Schuster, and they say that Mr. Levin is explaining the core elements of Marx's ideology are now pervasive in American society and culture, from schools, the press, corporations, Hollywood, Democratic Party, et cetera, and the Biden presidency, he says. And it's often cloaked in deceptive labels like progressivism, democratic socialism, social activism, and more. Again, this is coming from Threshold Edition, and they are the conservative, new conservative imprint of Simon & Schuster. They say that Levin digs into the psychology and tactics of these movements, the widespread brainwashing of students, the anti-American purposes of critical race theory, and the Green New Deal. And the book arrives next Tuesday.
Sometimes regular news anchors or TV personalities, we see a lot, make a move and you scratch your head and say, huh, well, that's too bad. I hope it works out for them. Didn't work out so well for Megyn Kelly, but may the future change things for Megyn.
Yes, indeed. She is going back on the air, and I'll tell you where she'll be. You know, we remember her on Fox News and the incredible encounter she had with then presidential candidate Donald Trump back in the day when he was still at a debate. And she also went on NBC News with a very large salary and subsequently left the network. But she has revealed this week that she has signed a new deal with Sirius XM. She's going to host a live two-hour talk show that will be at 2 p.m. Eastern time, 5 days a week. And this will be on the network's Triumph channel. And she just went ahead and announced her new gig on Twitter. And she says, I can't think of a better partner to help us expand the reach even further than a blue chip brand like SiriusXM, which has always been a leader in predicting market trends, is perfectly positioned for the evolving manner in which Americans consume their news. That's what Ms. Kelly advised in her statement. And yes, it's going to be called the Megyn Kelly Show. So we'll have to give a listen very soon when she makes her debut back on the airways. It's on the radio, but she's back on the air.
You know, that big UFO report came out, which was somewhat inconclusive. You've got some more poll numbers on how Americans feel about life on other planets.
Yes, indeed. In fact, this is a Pew Research Center poll. I always pay attention to what they have to do over there. And this is a very large poll. It is a Pew Research Center American Trends panel poll of 10,417 U.S. adults, and this was just released on June the 30th. I'm just going to give you a couple of numbers. I'm one of those people that's, you know, always looking at the skies for one reason or another, and who knows. But anyway, 87% of U.S. adults do not view UFOs as a major threat to the nation. 65% say that their best guess is that intelligent life exists on other planets. 51% say that the UFOs reported by military personnel are likely evidence of intelligent life outside Earth. Last but not least, 49% say the federal government is doing a bad job dealing with reported UFO sightings. So you're right about that report that came out that seemed inconclusive. A lot of people are saying, you know, just go ahead and tell us. Why not? So that's your Pew Research Center poll for today. And interesting that 51% say that those UFOs that the Navy reported are likely evidence of intelligent life outside Earth.
And while we're talking about Mark Levin, a champion of the Free Republic, you've got a poll that might be something he'd be interested in.
Well, yes, indeed, Rick. We've got an interesting poll here. This is coming from National Public Radio, PBS NewsHour, and Marist College. Here's the question they asked their respondents. Do you think democracy in the United States is alive and well, or that democracy in the United States is under threat? Just going to give you the numbers here. 67% of U.S. adults overall agree that democracy in the United States is under threat. Okay? That includes 83% of Republicans, 67% of Independents, 57% of Democrats, a couple more numbers, along with 74% of whites and 57% of non-whites, and that is the pollster's language there. Also, 68% of men and 66% of women. That's kind of across the board. People are getting worried about democracy. And, again, this is from NPR, PBS, and Marist College. The poll of 1,115 U.S. adults was conducted June 22nd through 29 and released July the 2nd.
You know, we always live vicariously through you with your armchair travel and then, of course, your wonderful real estate offerings. But what do you have in terms of travel this weekend?
Yeah, well, if you need some armchair travel, you haven't gotten in the car or on the plane or anything else yet, and you're still in the armchair, I'm not particularly going anywhere at the moment, but the National Trust for Historic Preservation is telling you to celebrate the return of travel. Now, they have just released information on the National Trust Tours for 2022, and this group operates kind of very classy, small-scale tours and particularly interesting places. They always have experts and educated folks along as your guide. And a couple of their tours coming up are the Fabled Rail Journeys through Wales, England, and Scotland aboard the Royal Scotsman train, cruises on the Great Lakes, visited the coast of Vietnam, and even encounters close by in historic Hudson River Valley. If you're curious about that, just go to nationaltrusttours.com under the heading catalogs. They got quite a few of them there. Again, that's nationaltrusttours.com. And have a little cruise there while you're sitting there in the den.
Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. You can follow her on Twitter at Harper Bulletin. Thank you. It is 6:46. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. We'll talk with Jim Trusty next, and then we'll get to John Gizzi, KT McFarland, and Tony Schaefer this morning. But first, we head to the WMAL Traffic Center. LBD is there.
In Virginia, on the Beltway right now, it's all clear on the inner loop and on the outer loop. Heads up, though, on 395 southbound, traffic is slow in Arlington between the GW Parkway exit 10 and the Pentagon. On 66 in Fairfax County, traffic is slow in Vienna between Nutley Street exit 62 and the Vienna Metro Station. And on the eastbound side of 66, right now, you shouldn't find any delays. I have no reports of anything in the roadway to slow you down. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Well, a beautiful Saturday ahead this morning. Very comfortable temperatures climbing out of the 60s and 70s. High temperatures this afternoon in the mid-80s. But what I like about today is the humidity will be nice and low. So take advantage, get outside and enjoy it, because humidity levels starting to rise overnight tonight. Tomorrow, hotter, more humid. We're back to 90 degrees with a slight chance for a pop-up shower or thunderstorm during the afternoon and evening. I'm 7 News meteorologist Eileen Whalen in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
It's 68 degrees, 648, the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
Summer weekend here on the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by Jim Trusty. He is the former chief of the organized crime and gang section at the U.S. Department of Justice. He is now a partner at the IFRA law firm here in Washington. Jim, always great to get your perspectives.
Thanks, Rick. Always fun to be with you.
Former President Donald Trump filed a class action lawsuit on Wednesday. He's targeting Facebook, Google, and Twitter. And, of course, he's had a long-running battle with those companies following the suspension of his accounts. The suit alleging the companies violated Trump's First Amendment rights in suspending his accounts argues that Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube no longer should be considered private companies, but rather a, quote, state actor whose actions are constrained by First Amendment restrictions on government limitations on free speech. Jim, let's get your legal perspective on it.
Sure. Well, look, I think there's a lot of good reason for frustration, not just for President Trump, but just for conservatives in general when it comes to what's going on with these tech giants. You know, what we were seeing over a period of really years now is Congress bringing in the, you know, Zuckerbergs, the Jack Dorseys, and occasionally asking them pretty pointed questions. And typically the response was, I'll have to get back to you. And I think a lot of us watched that and realized that there was, an awful lot of smoke and mirrors, but not much substance in terms of any real success in moderating the behavior of big tech. And now we're at a point where the president is engaging in, as a class action and litigation. And I think, you know, there's a lot of folks who are going to follow this carefully, as they should, because it's very interesting and there's something that needs to be done. But the claims are going to be very tough sledding. I mean, this idea that the First Amendment is going to apply to private entities is a real challenge. You know, the 44-page complaint filed by the president's lawyers literally tries to equate these entities to the government. It says they work with the state, that they are effectively part of the government. I think that's a bit of a reach, a bit of an oversell, but it's going to the issue of how the First Amendment applies to the state. I think the better phrasing that they're going to want to be using throughout this litigation is that these are public use entities, that these are essentially the equivalent of public utilities. And they're so widespread in terms of their control of information and the access of, you know, so many citizens to that information, that they should be treated as if they are a public entity rather than a private entity. But calling them government or saying they're conspiring with government is not going to sell over the long run. The second part of the complaint is challenging Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, and that really is the hub of the problem. Those were what the questions were, you know, for the tech giants when they appear before Congress. Section 230, it was an act to promote the free marketplace of ideas. It basically said, look, if something bad happens on the platform that you've created, Mr. Twitter, Mr. Google, then we're not going to hold you liable for that. You know, as long as you're acting in good faith, it's going to be a free market and you've got the immunity. So, you know, that promotes the idea of people saying all sorts of things on their platforms. Well, what the tech giants have done is kind of had their cake and eaten it too. They've decided we want the immunity, but we're also going to go in and monitor content. And that's not really what was intended by Section 230, but Congress has shown no stomach for changing Section 230. So now the president has a suit hoping the courts will do it. And again, I think it's going to be a little bit tough.
So you say tough sledding, and sometimes cases like this will get dismissed very early on. What do you think the prospects are that it gets past that first phase? And if it does, what does it mean?
Well, you know, it's like when I talk to a client, I never put percentages on things. I hate that. It puts you in a bad box. But look, I think it's possible the complaint survives a motion to dismiss. I mean, there are fundamental legal issues, and that's really what you're kind of getting at on a motion to dismiss. If it does survive the motion to dismiss, the litigation gets super interesting because then you get into discovery. So now we're talking about depositions of Trump, of Zuckerberg, of Dorsey. I mean, Donald Trump probably welcomes a deposition on this topic, right? He would probably outlast the lawyers in terms of how he wants to answer things. What also is, I think, very interesting and probably scary for the tech giants is that discovery process is where you might find either whistleblowers or smoking gun emails or texts that demonstrate that social media was targeting conservative thought. Now, you know, Donald Trump has to worry about questions around January 6th about what happened at the Capitol. But I think the tech giants are the ones that have more risk after a motion to dismiss is denied because they're big companies. There's going to be a possible paper trail or a disgruntled employee that really blows the lid off of how they've conducted themselves with a double standard. You know, the Ayatollah can talk about how the Holocaust didn't happen, but Donald Trump can't tweet while he's a sitting president. And I think that's the kind of thing that cries out for a deep dig.
All right. I want to turn to the legal side of the recent ransomware attacks. The gang Are Evil conducting its boldest attack yet over the 4th of July holiday. And dust really hasn't settled yet, but researchers say that the hack allowed Are Evil to infect more than 1,500 different organizations. They've asked for a $70 million lump sum to unlock all infected computers. To me, that sounds like a bargain for 1,500 companies. But the question to you is how do you pursue this thing legally, and how do you trace it back to Russia? You get Putin involved, Joe Biden talking to Vladimir Putin on Friday once again. Supposedly in that conversation, they spoke about these ransomware attacks.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of fundamental things that people need to keep in mind and that should not get obscured by, you know, potentially wimpy foreign policy decision making. I mean, the first thing is, you know, Putin is the head of essentially an organized crime state, and he smells weakness and he thrives on it. And I think that Putin is absolutely testing the mettle of President Biden right now. I mean, they have a conversation about hacking. Supposedly there's this kind of list of what's off limits. And then all of a week later, we have this broad, huge hack. The other thing to keep in mind is there's really no such thing as rogue hacking from inside Russia. I don't buy it. I don't think that there are groups of 20-year-old guys sitting around computers without the permission slip from Putin's state. And so, you know, to pretend that the Russians are surprised or can't verify these things or, you know, aren't really sure who's doing it, I think that's almost mythical. It's probably not true. And so we can't build a foreign policy or take legal action thinking there's a divide between the Russian government and the actors inside of Russia that are doing these things. So there's a lot that has to be done on a pure kind of foreign policy level. And I think you have to look at it. My own view is this is basically, you know, asymmetrical warfare. I mean, if you shut down oil pipelines, food industry, hydroelectric dams, I mean, there's some pretty severe effects in this kind of new type of warfare that we're facing. The legal system, the criminal justice system, which is, I know what you asked, it's not particularly well equipped for these types of moments. You know, we had, I think, 13 or 16 Russians indicted early into the Mueller probe for hacking. And it feels good for a moment. It looks good. But there was no expectation that any of these people were going to face justice in the American criminal justice system. So all you're doing is essentially getting out a press release one day, affecting their ability to travel internationally as individuals because there might be a Interpol red notice or a U.S. warrant that's out there. but it has no serious effect, and it's not going to lead to any measure of real justice. So that's my concern here, is that if we, you know, get to the point where the Russians announce they've cooperated with us and, you know, give us information to let us indict 5 people, 10 people, 20 people, it's not going to really change the level of disruption that's being caused within Putin's state that's directed towards the U.S. The criminal justice system is not going to solve the day on these types of events.
Well, Jim, I know we want to talk about Michael Avenatti. I wanted to get your assessment of the sentencing, and we'll do that coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. So stick around. We got John Gizzi right out of the 7 o'clock news. We'll rejoin Jim right around quarter after 7. Stay with us on the Saturday Morning Update.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station.